We are holding on Tess Zion Amr Aleph, second. We said in the Mishnah, Kol Shalei Nasis before.
So we described yesterday the whole procedure that says, we described the basics of the procedure that are needed in order to
Mekadesh the city of Yerushalayim, whether the original city or whether when they enlarged it, and the same thing to be Mekadesh the Azara, the original and when they enlarged it. And we had a whole bunch of things listed in the Mishnah. We said you need a king and a Navi and the Urim B'Tumim and the Todas and so on and so forth. So does it mean that you need all of them,
or is it enough to have some of them? Ishmael, so we have a discussion between Amr and Rav.
Ravuna Amar B'chol Eilu Tanan. Ravuna says it means you need every single one, all eight things that we mentioned. Rav Nachman Amar B'achas B'chol Eilu Tanan. Rav Nachman says it doesn't mean you need all of them. You need some of them. You need some of them. Now, we said yesterday, Rashi says you at least need that. We're going to say that Kol Eilu doesn't necessarily mean that. Hold on. We said yesterday that Rashi says that at least you do need the two Todos, and you need some of the things. Some of the Mepharshim want to argue that maybe even the Gemara's Habamina might have been that you don't need the two Todos. But in any case, according to Rav Nachman, you don't need, for example, the king and the Navi and the Urim V'Tumim, etc. What's the underlying Machlokes? Rav Huna Amar B'chol Eilu Tanan. Rav Huna says that you need all of them because Kasava Kedusha Rishona Kidshala Shaita Kidshala Asid Lava. He holds like this: the original Kedusha that was made when Yerushalayim became the capital and became the site of the Beit Mikdash, and the original Kedusha that was made when they built the Azara, that Kedusha from David and Shlomo's time applied for that time, the Kidshala Asid Lava. It also applied for future times. So in other words, they never needed to be Mekadesh again. They may need to when Mashiach comes, fine, but they didn't need to for the second Beis Hamikdash, which is a good thing because they didn't have the Urim B'Tumim and they didn't have a king. If they had had to do it again for the second Beis Hamikdash, then they couldn't have done it. The Yerushalayim wouldn't have had its Kedusha and the Azara wouldn't have had its Kedusha. The Ezra, what about the whole thing we described yesterday from the Nehemiah portion of Ezra, where he describes the whole procession and we learn from there some of the dinim. Zeichu ba'almahu da'avad, he just did it as a zeichu. He did it as a remembrance of what should be done. But like this, it wasn't actually the official thing to give it Kedusha because there was no king and there was no Urim B'Tumim. A Navi they had, Todos they had, the Shir. This is by the second Beis Hamikdash, yeah. This is after they built, so they built the second Beis Hamikdash. They had first Kodesh gave permission to build it, then afterwards he rescinded it, and so all you had was the foundations of it for some years, for 18 years, then they got permission, the Nevi'im told them to start again, and then Dariavish gave them permission to continue, so eventually it took them 4 years and they finally built it.
Is Rav saying there was some Kedusha?
No, that's what Rav Huna is saying. You have to say, therefore, that the original Kedusha from David and Shlomo's time must have lasted through Golas Bavel and into the second Beis Hamikdash. Therefore, there was no need, really, at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash to do this whole procession and everything. They just did it as a zecher for how it should be. But it wasn't really the official thing, so there's no king, etc. Rav Nachman, whereas Rav Nachman says all you need is one or more of these things, because Kasava Kedusha Rishona Kidshala Shaita V'loy Kidshala Asid Lavi, he holds that the original Kedusha of the Azara and of Yerushalayim expired with the Churban, and therefore you needed a new one now when they built the second Beis Hamikdash in order for it to be the Azara and for it to be Yerushalayim to have their respective Kedusha. The Ezra Kedushi Kaddish, therefore Ezra had to do a real proper Kiddush, and we know it worked, even though there was no Urim V'Tumim, and even though there was no king.
So he holds that
you can do it without Urim V'Tumim and without a king. And it had to be done, therefore, because without that, it wouldn't have worked. Yeah. Sorry, one second. Fine. All right. Okay, so Rava asked Rav Nachman, so you're telling me that the original Kedusha, that the original Kedusha expired, and therefore it had to be redone, and even though you don't have the Urim B'Tumim and you don't have a king, nevertheless it's still valid. Our Mishnah clearly said, Kol Shalei Nasis B'Chol Eilu. Our Mishnah clearly said you didn't do it with all of these. So what do you mean? It sounds like you need all of them, like Ravona says. What do you mean?
Kol Shalei Nasis
B'Chol Eilu does not have the full Kedusha. Yeah. The answer is Tony Ba'achas Mikolelu. Okay, Rav Nachman will say that the wording of the Mishnah needs to be altered a little bit, not B'chol Elu, meaning all of these, but Ba'achas Mikolelu, if it's not done with any of these things. The Ritva explains that actually it may not be really changing the wording of the Mishnah. We've talked before about the idea that, Kol has two different meanings in Hebrew. It means all and it means any. So Rav Nachman can understand the Mishnah that it's not done, B'chol Elu, meaning with any of these. So there's no Melech and no Navi and no Urim V'Tumim, etc. Then it doesn't work. But as long as you have the Navi and you have the Shtei Todos, then that's good enough.
That is to say Mikol Elu.
Okay, so that's Rava's question, basically, is Rava is assuming that the Mishnah wouldn't use such an ambiguous expression.
Right.
But Rav Nachman can still say that. Nevertheless, you can still say that's what the Mishnah means. Okay. By the way, this that we're discussing, the question of whether Kedusha Rishona exists for all time or not, is also, I mean, it's relevant, first of all, as far as the question nowadays, are you allowed to go into the Harabayis? If the Kedusha expired with the Churban, then you should be allowed to. Lamaisa, virtually all poskim say that it's also true, which means that we hold, and in fact we do hold, according to Rav Huna, that Kedusha Rishona exists, it still exists. The Rambam makes a distinction, by the way. The Rambam says, now there is a discussion in a few places in Shas about the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, whether it survived the Churban or not. And the halacha is that it did not, which is why Trumas and Maestris and Shmita and whatnot nowadays are the Rabbanim. However, the Rambam draws a distinction between Eretz Yisrael, the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael basically depends on the Jewish people having conquered it. Therefore, once it was conquered, when they conquered it in Yeshua's times, and later on when they settled it in Ezra's times. So once the conquest, once it was reconquered, but once it was conquered by the Goyim, then the Kedusha went away. As opposed to, and even if you could argue the Kedusha from Bayis Sheni still exists, which it does for certain halachas, never, first of all, there's areas, there's discussions in many places in Shas about the borders of Eretz Yisrael. You have the borders of Olam Mitzrayim, and you have the borders of Olam Babel. The borders of Olam Mitzrayim being basically more or less the borders that are described in Parshas Maaseh, which is the area that the Jewish people settled at some point or other during the time before and during the first Beis Hamikdash. And then you have the borders of Olam Babel, which are much narrower, just the area that they settled during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash. For purposes of Mitzvah Atluyas Ba'aretz, for the most part, they only apply in the Gvulos of Olam Babel. So the Kedusha, that's the thing.
It goes
only as far north as Akkoi, and even there's areas near Akkoi that aren't included. It's much more restricted. It doesn't include Ashkelon, for example. There's various other areas, and even there's enclaves within Eretz Yisrael that aren't included. Beit Shan, for example. We'll learn about that in Holon, Bez Hashem.
Coming back to the Beit HaMikdash, what do we do from the fact that the foundations are still there? We see them today.
We see the foundations of the outer walls, the retaining walls of the Har HaBayis.
Well, but the outer walls are here. There's a strong presumption that the inner walls are also here.
If they were there, they're buried under the dirt. We don't know where they are. But that's exactly it. In theory, there should be areas on the Har HaBayis that we are allowed to go into because, first of all, I mentioned the other day, the enclosure of the Har HaBayis nowadays is much bigger than 500 by 500 amos, which is what the Mishnah tells us in Midas was the proper size of the Har HaBayis. So who just extended it? And that's
three times or
whatever, something like that. But that's first of all. Second of all, even within the Har HaBayis itself, after all, Tmei Emes are allowed to enter the Har HaBayis. They're just not allowed to enter within the Chael. So in principle, if we knew where the Chael is, we could enter every other part of the Har HaBayis. The problem is we don't know. Everything within the Har HaBayis was destroyed, or at least is buried so far underground that we don't know what's where.
Outside the Chael, there's no Kedusha, we're saying?
It has Kedusha. There's a certain level of Kedusha to the Har HaBayis. There's Zavim and people that Tuma Yotzale and Megufim, Zavim, Nidus, Yodus, or whatever, are also in it. But other than that, that's Machna Leviyah. That's the equivalent of the camp of the Leviyim in the Midbar. But Tmei Emes are allowed in the Har HaBayis. They're only not allowed from the Chael anymore. So if we knew where the Chael is, we would know, but we don't know.
The Chael is what?
The Chael is the area around the Azara. So you have, there's the Azara, there's the rectangle which constitutes the Azara, the Ezra Yisrael, the Ezra Koyanim, and then the area of the Mizbeach, etc. Around that, you have an area surrounded by a low fence called the Sorig, 10 amos wide on each side. That's the Chael. Okay, anyway. Okay, so the Rambam explains like this, basically. So the original Kedusha of Yeshua's time, of Eretz Yisrael, went away after Eretz Yisrael was conquered by the Goyim, because it came about by conquest, so it's removed by conquest. Therefore, you only have net. So that later on, you have when they came to build the second Beis Hamikdash, they settled in various parts of Eretz Yisrael. That's the borders of Oled Bavel. That still exists because fine, that was done by Chazaka. That was done by the Jewish people settling in these places in Eretz Yisrael. And from then until now, you've had a continuous Jewish presence in Eretz Yisrael. From Ezra's time, during Golas Bavel, there weren't any Jews in Eretz Yisrael. But from Ezra's times and on, continuously there have been always Jews, even in the worst times in Eretz Yisrael. So the Chazaka still exists. The Gevulas Oled Bavel still exists. When Mashiach comes, then he'll be re-Makadosh Eretz Yisrael with Kedusha Shlishis, with a level of Kedusha from the similar to what they did in the times of Yeshua.
The entire
Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, the Rambam goes on to say it's different with the Kedusha of Yerushalayim and the Kedusha of the Beis Hamikdash because those don't depend on conquest or settlement or anything. Those depend on the Shechina, and the Shechina is always there.
So the same about Eretz Yisrael.
It's a lower level of Shechina. We're talking about the Beis Hamikdash primarily is the place of Hashem's Shechina. So therefore, so that's what we're talking about. So therefore, it's Kedusha. So that's why the halacha is that it's Kedusha Lai. Okay, Toshma, come, let's prove one way or the other, again, about this question between Rav Nachman and Rav Huna, whether the original Kedusha worked or not, or whether it continued in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, or whether they needed to be Mekadosh it again. A Braisa says, Abasholim, Shnei Bitzin Hoyu Bahara Mishcha. There were two Bitzin, Rashi explains that Bitzin is a word meaning swamps. So there were two swampy areas on Hara Mishcha. Usually Hara Mishcha means Hara Zesim. Tachtona ve'olyona, there was a lower down the mountain, and a higher one, further up the mountain. Tachtona niskad shebacholel, and both of them were inside the walls of Yerushalayim. Tachtona niskad shebacholel, the lower one was properly niskadish with this whole procedure, because it was done in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, so therefore, they had a king, they had a navi, they had their own determining. Tachtona, it means lower down, the slope, closer. So if we're talking about Haram Mishcha, which is what we have in front of us, on the face of it, that means on the lower slopes of Har HaDesim. I'll tell you in a minute, Rabbi Chiyo Michal Tukachinsky, who wrote a lot about the Dinim of Eretz Yisrael and the geography of Yerushalayim and whatever, he has a bit of a discussion about this. Let's talk about what he says in a minute, but first let's deal with what we have in front of us in the Gemara. So you have lower down on Har HaMishcha, and you have it further up. Tachtona Niskad Shebacholelu, the lower one was Niskadish using this entire procedure with the king and the Navi and the Urim Betumim, etc. And therefore it has full Kedusha. The upper one, further up the mountain, was not Niskadish with all of these. It was only Niskadish by Oile Goyla, by the people who came back from Babel, meaning sometime during the second Beis Hamikdash.
Why is that?
Because it was higher up the mountain. It was further away from Yerushalayim. Therefore, Shaloi B'melech, there was no king, V'shaloi B'Urim B'Tumim, and there was no Urim B'Tumim, because there was no Urim B'Tumim during the second Beis Hamikdash. It was 25 feet, it could be 100 feet, it could be 200 feet, I don't know, however far it was. Therefore, what happened? So what's the difference? Tachtoina shahisa kedusha sa gemura. So the lower one, which had full kedusha because it was done properly with the melech and the navi, etc. Therefore, amei ha'aretz nichnasim l'sham. So now the amei ha'aretz would come into there. Va'ochlan sham kodshim kalim avaloi ma'itishen. They would eat kodshim kalim there, which is perfectly valid because it's considered an extension of Yerushalayim because it was extended in the proper way. However, they would not eat ma'itishen there. Why would they not eat ma'itishen, the amei ha'aretz, even though you're allowed to? Rashi gives a very interesting explanation. He says the Amei Ha'aretz, now we know there were Amei Ha'aretz who weren't careful with Maestris at all. That's why they have the whole thing of Demai. But among the Amei Ha'aretz who were careful about Maester, they wanted to do it in the best possible way because they hear the famous Drosha, after the Shvil Shadisaster, give you Maester and be careful with it in order that you become rich. And of course, they wanted to take advantage of that. It's sort of like, you know, nowadays whenever people say that something is a gula for riches, it always makes people more careful with it. So it was the same thing in those times. So therefore, they would sort of be machmer on themselves in a way they didn't even need to be machmer on themselves. They would eat like within the original borders of Yerushalayim as it existed in the times of David and Shlomo. They would say to themselves, okay, yeah, this thing is an extension of Yerushalayim, but maybe it's not really, maybe whatever. And therefore, kind of they'd be careful to eat only within the original borders of the city. But
that's the border of the city.
So in other words, the point is, okay. So you had here's the original city. Then you had, at some point, they started building up the mountain on Har HaZeitim. So now you have this lower swamp on Har HaZeitim, which was included. There's actually two. They're saying there was a lower one and the upper one, and both of them are within the wall of Yerushalayim.
Well, from the other side.
Hold on, I'll tell you. So now what we're saying is, like, the lower one was done in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash. In the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, this was next to Yerushalayim, and a wall was built around it. Therefore, now, in principle, therefore, it has fully the dinim of Yerushalayim, as we're saying over here. However, the Amei Ha'aretz would be machmer on themselves where they didn't need to, and they would have to eat over here in the city. They would not go up and eat Ma'ase Sheni on the slope over here. However, they would eat Kodshim Kalim over there because that they had no reason to be machmer on themselves. and therefore they would eat it. The chaverim, as far as the chaverim, the Talmid Chachamim, who knew the halachas, ochem sham kodshim kalam and ma'aseh sheni. They would eat both kodshim kalam and ma'aseh sheni there, because it is 100%. It is 100% part of your shlein.
On the slope, meaning.
On the slope, on the lower slope, yeah. El Yona Shaloi Hosek Dushas Gemara. What about the one higher up on the slope, which did not have full kedusha because it was not done by in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash? It was done and it was included within the walls in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, when again there was no king and no Urim Batumim. So
this is, by the way, the El Yona with kitches.
Hold on. Yeah. Wait. Okay. So that upper one. So the upper one, the Amir Oret again, would eat Kodshim Kalam there and not Maitesheni. Now here, they were wrong in doing that, because the fact is it's not really officially part of Yerushalayim, because it didn't have the full Kedusha, because they didn't do it with all the with the king and the Urim Batumim. Therefore, they shouldn't be eating their Kodshim Kalam. However, the Amir Oret would anyway, because they figured it's within the wall, it's within the wall. But they wouldn't eat Maitesheni for the same reason as before. They Dafka insisted on eating that in the lower.
Where were the walls exactly?
We don't know, but hold on, I'll tell you. Okay. The Chaverim, Einoichem Shom Loi Kodshim Kalam V'Loi Maitesheni. The Chaverim, the Nemenach HaChamim, knew that this is not really part of Yerushalayim, and therefore they would eat there not Kodshim Kalam, not Maitesheni. Umipnei Ma Loi Kedshua. Now, why were they not fully Makadish, that upper swampy area? Because Shein Mesifin Ala Ir V'Ala Azoris, because you can't add to the city or to the Azoris. Elo Melech V'Novi V'Urim V'Tumim or V'Sanhedrin Shalayin Aleph or V'Shtei Todas of Ashir. You need all the details that you said in our Mishnah, and they didn't have a king, and they didn't have an Inam Urim V'Tumim. So continues the Braisa, continues Abashol V'Loma Kedshua. So why were they Makadish it? More interject, what do you mean, Loma Kedshua, Hamet, Loi Kedshua? You just said they weren't Makadish. What do you mean, why were they Makadish, the upper one? No, the question is, Loma Hichnisuha. In that case, if they weren't able to properly be Makadish, why did they include it within the wall? That upper area, further up the slope of Harazesin, why did they include it in the wall if this is just going to mislead people? It's going to make the Amei Oretz think that you can eat Kodshim Kalam there when you're not supposed to.
When they came back, they rebuilt the wall.
At some point during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, yeah, they included this area. The reason is because strategically, it's the weak point of your Shalayim. Turpa literally means like the exposed area. And it's too easy to conquer it from there. You mentioned before Titus standing over there, so therefore they included it within the wall in order that it should be more fortified.
Not only Titus, but Moshe Dayan in 1967 stood there.
Okay.
And when the Jordanians started, he said, "This is where we're going to come."
Oh, okay. Now, by the way, though, Tosfos points out, in that case then, so don't you have a problem? I mean, very nice. You want to be careful about the defenses of your Shalayim. On the other hand, you're causing that Amei Oretz are going to be inappropriately eating their Kodesh. So Adarabba, Tosfos says, they weren't so worried about that. Adarabba, let people think that it is part of your Shalayim, so this way they'll be more moser themselves. People will be more willing to actually live there and help defend it. If we tell them outright, you know what, even though this is the wall, this is within the wall, it's not really part of your Shalayim, nobody's going to want to bother living there, and then it's going to be too weakly defended. Now, with all that said, so here we're saying that we're talking about Anhara Mishpah. However, again, Reb Tikhachinsky talks about this in one of his Sfarim, Irak Kodesh HaMikdash. He mentions a couple of problems with this, one of them being, what are you talking about? Yet Harazesim is the place it's easy to conquer Yerushalayim from. Between it and Yerushalayim proper, you have Nachal Kidron, which is pretty deep. Abba, the Romans had a hard time conquering from that direction. They wound up coming from the north, because it's either the topography is flat.
From the outskirts, that's the most important.
But that's the point is, you don't go across Nachal Kidron and up. That's too dangerous. No, you go around from the north.
And you have to go to
Harazesim is more to the east of Yerushalayim. Anyway, there's a couple of other problems he points out. Also, Nachal Kidron was always known to be a place of Tumah. They wouldn't have had it within the walls. So he explains on the basis of some information in Josephus and from some other sources that we're not talking about, these are not on Harazesim as we have over here on Haramishcha. Rather, they were north of the Harabais, more or less the area of the Muslim and Christian quarters nowadays. So it's more flat over there, and therefore Turp of Yerushalayim.
Where is Mount Scopus?
Mount Scopus is northwest of Yerushalayim. It's an extension of Harazesim.
Right.
Again, you still have Nachal Kidron between it and Yerushalayim proper.
The strategic place.
Right, but you're not going to include it within the walls of Yerushalayim because he explains what we're talking about over here is the areas north, which eventually became what's nowadays the Muslim quarter and the Christian quarter. Those are the two Bitsoyim that we're talking about over here. So then it fits much better. It's a Turk or Shurish line. It's a weak point. And in fact, after when the Romans came and invaded, they came and started from the north. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, the point of mentioning this Breisa is, close the door, please, guys. the point of mentioning this braita is we see Abba Shaul clearly says that you need the king and you need the Urim Batumim in order to have a proper Kedusha, and if not, then not. That works out according to Rav Huna. That doesn't work according to Rav Nachman. What is Rav Nachman going to do with that? The answer is Tanoim. It is actually Machloikas Tanoim. This Machloikas between Rav Huna and Rav Nachman about how to understand our Mishnah is actually based on a Machloikas Tanoim, whether the Kedusha Rishonah of Yerushalayim existed for all time or whether it had to be redone by Ezra. Namely, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Shamaiti Kshahu Yabonin Vahechel, I heard from my Rabbeim that when they were building the Hechel in the times of Ezra, also Kloyim Lahechel, it could also be the first one, actually, I guess, but primarily Rashi says we're talking about Bimei Ezra. Also Kloyim Lahechel or Kloyim Lazarus, what they did is they made curtains in the around the place where the Hechel should be and curtains around the place where the walls of the Azara should be, because what they wanted to do is they wanted to be able to bring Korbanos. The Psukim described, and the Psukim described in Sefer Ezra over there, that as soon as possible, after they came to Yerushalayim in Kodesh's time, they rebuilt the Mizbeach. They immediately rebuilt the Mizbeach so that they could bring Korbanos, and then they started working on the Hechel on the wall, and that's when the local Goyim and the Kustim and whatever got involved and complained to Kodesh, and the permission was rescinded. But in Udra Eliezer is saying, on the face of it anyway, in order for them to be able to be Makriv on that Mizbeach, they have to have something standing in for the walls of the Hechel and the walls of the Azaris. Therefore, they had to put up curtains. Ella, the only difference between the two sets of curtains. So they just had curtains, and in fact, it's interesting. So temporarily, until eventually they replaced them with wall.
We could do the same.
If we knew the exact Mokum al Hechel and everything, then yes. I've mentioned before that there have been, over the generations, there have been great Chachamim who wanted to come down to the Harabayas and the Makar Korbanos. I mentioned, for example, Rabbi Chiel of Paris. One of the Balei HaTosfos who moved to Yerushalayim in the mid 1300s and mid 13th century, he wanted to be Makriv a Korban Pesach. The other Chachamim of his times argued against him on various grounds, but in principle, according to what we're saying over here, it should have been the church. Well, again, if we say that Kedusha Rishona Kid Shalom Shaita for Kid Shalom Lava, if we say that not, if we say that it expired with the Korban, then not. But again, Halacha is that it does lie. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Ella. And by the way, some of the Mephoshim say, you know, when we say every day in Ezra Mekoyman that the Necholim, the Fnim and Akloyim, why do we use the expression Kloyim instead of the walls of the Azara? So some of the Mephoshim say, some of the Mephoshim refer it to the fact that it goes, that these Mishnayos, the basic, I mean, these are, one reason why we say Ezra Mekoyman every day, why out of all the Prokham Mishnayos, one of the reasons is because clear halachas in there. At least in that perek, in the actual Mishnayos, you have no machloikas in. It's all halacha Moshe Mitzinai. L'maisa, a couple of the details in it are the subject of machloikas hanoyim, as the Gemara discusses over there, but at least in the Mishnah, it's phrased all of Stam Mishnahs, so therefore we say it every day. But the idea is, therefore, so the phrasing kloyim may go back all the way to the Mishkan of Moshe's times, where they actually had kloyim. The other possibility is that they're talking about it like this, where they had, for those years, where they had the Olibava, where they had the kloyim temporarily. Okay. Ella, the difference between the two sets of kloyim, the hechel bonim machutz, what they did is the ones that were surrounding the area of the hechel were outside of the footprint of the hechel. In other words, if you have, for example, the footprint of the hechel is supposed to be this, then they would build they put up the curtains on the outside of that square, so that the walls, when they build the walls, will be on the inside of it. When it came to the curtains that stood in for the walls of the Azara, those were on the inside of the area. So if this is where the wall of the Azara is, this is where the inner side of the wall of the Azara is supposed to be, for example, and they would put the curtain over here, and then they would build the wall outside of those curtains.
Why
is that? Because when it comes to the Hechel, you want that when they're building the Hechel, they shouldn't be feasting their eyes on the Hechel. It's a place of great Kedusha. So you don't want that the workers should be looking in and then staring at the area of the Hechel. Therefore, you build the curtains on the inside of where the walls are supposed to be. That way, now they're going and putting down the stones on the outside of those curtains, and that way they're not looking inside.
When you say the inside, it's really inside as relative to the walls themselves.
Right, that's what I'm saying. In other words, yeah. So you would have, again, you'd have the curtain over here, and then you'd be building the wall on the outside of that curtain. That way you can't look in. The Azara have a lower level of Kedusha. The Azaras have a lower level of Kedusha, so therefore you could build them on the inside. Yeah. Therefore you could be building the stones on the inside of the curtain. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, the Gemara is assuming at this point that why is Rabbi Eliezer saying that you needed these curtains? Because without them you don't have a Hechel, and without a Hechel you can't be bringing Korbanos, implying therefore that the original Kedusha didn't last.
Could you offer Korbanos without a cover from ceiling, let's say?
Yes, as long as the heichal had something around it, yeah. Omer Rabbi Yeshua, then Rabbi Yeshua says, Shemaiti, I heard from my Rebbeim, Shemakrivin Achopishen Bais, you're allowed to bring korbanos even when there's no Beis HaMikdash standing, when there's no heichal standing. Oichlim Kotchim Kotchim Achopishen Ploin, you're allowed to eat Kotchim Kotchim even if there are no curtains at all. Kotchim Kalam and Maisesheni Achopishen Ploin, and you're allowed to eat Kotchim Kalam and Maisesheni anywhere in your Yerushalayim, even if there's no wall. Because the original Kedusha of Shlomo's times lasted. So therefore, now what's the implication? Why are he and Rabbi Eliezer saying different things? Lav miklal that Rabbi Eliezer suffered like Kedusha lost his love. Isn't it evidently then that Rabbi Eliezer is saying that the original Kedusha did not last? Therefore, they needed to put up these curtains, and without the curtains to stand in for the Heichal and the Azorot, you don't have the ability to eat Kodshim and bring Korbanos and whatever. So therefore, Rav Huna would be going like Rabbi Yeshua, and Rav Nachman would be going like Rabbi Eliezer.
That's
the Machlokes Hanoi. However, Amalei Ravina L'Ravashi Mimai. However, Ravina says to Ravashi, who says that's the correct explanation? Maybe both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua do agree the original Kedusha of Yerushalayim and of the Beit Mikdash from Shlomo's time is permanent. Why are they saying two different things? Umar may b'shmi alei kama. So okay, Rabbi Eliezer is saying what he heard from his Rebbeim, that they put up curtains. Rabbi Yeshua is saying what he heard from his Rebbeim. They're not necessarily arguing. They're just saying two different statements that are complementary. So you're going to ask them, why did Rabbi Eliezer say you needed to put up curtains if you don't need curtains at all? The answer is Tzniyos Sabalma. They put them up for Tzniyos. Just that this way you're making it this way. People are not staring into the area of the Heichal unnecessarily, and people are not staring into the Azara unnecessarily.
It was
elevated a few amas. Fine, but you could be standing someplace and looking over, whatever. So yeah. Stand on the roof of your house or whatever, I don't know, whatever. So like this, they built curtains in order that this way people aren't steering where they should be. Not necessarily that they would have needed them, because without them you're not allowed to bring korbanos. So it could be Rabbi Eliezer Taka holds that the original Kedusha is permanent. Close the door, please. Thank you. Could be Rabbi Eliezer does hold the Kedusha is permanent. But they put up curtains for tzniyos, yeah.
Not for Kedusha.
Okay, so we don't have any necessarily proof that the Tanoim argue on what Rav Huna and Rav Nachman could. Yeah, so therefore, you're back to the question, who does Rav Nachman go like, given that we have Abishol, clear Braisa, that says that to be the Kaddish, the city, you need the Melech and you need the Urim V'Tumim, implying the only way Yerushalayim had any Kedusha in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash is because the Kedusha still remaining from Shlomo's times, from the first Beis Hamikdash.
So we're looking for a source.
Ela hani tanoi. No, rather we can say it's the following machlokes tanoi. Namely, the Tanya. Omer Rabbi Shmuel b'Rav Dezi. Loma manu chachamim es eli. We have in the last perek of Erchin, which we'll learn in a year and a half's time, Bez Hashem, that in the last perek over there, it lists a half a dozen walled cities in Eretz Yisrael, which is relevant to there in context over there. It's talking as far as the dinim of Bate Orechoyma, the special din that you buy a house in those cities, you only have a year to buy it back, and if not, then the buyer keeps it permanently. In other words, doesn't go back in Yovel. It's an exception to the rules of Yovel. You have a few other dinim that apply to walled cities in Eretz Yisrael. So there's a half a dozen listed in the Mishnah over there. Amar b'shmol b'Rav Yosi, loma manu. Yeah, the Mishnah list over there. There's Gamla. There's the old city. There's the old city of Tzipori, I think. The old city of Yudfas. Whatever. A number of cities in various places in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. So loma manu chachamim es eli. Why do the chachamim list specifically these? There are a lot of other walled cities in Eretz Yisrael from the times of Yeshua ben Nun. Now, the reason is like this. Sha'olu b'nei Agurla, because when the b'nei Agurla came up from Babel to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash, Motsu Elu v'Kidshum, they found these cities that were walled, and therefore they were Makadosh then.
So they didn't have their original.
So that's the point, in other words. But the Kedusha of the original ones expired once the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael expired. There you go. So there you have an opinion that says that the original Kedusha expired and is not valid. And again, by the way, the Rambam paskins that yes, when it comes to Eretz Yisrael as a whole, and therefore the Batei Arichayma, yes, the original Kedusha expired, and therefore you needed a new Kedusha from the time of the second Beis Hamikdash. That's the halacha, yeah. And then the Rambam, except for Yerushalayim and the Beis Hamikdash, there's a different kind of Kedusha, because again, that depends on the Shechina, and the Shechina never left. But that's the so Rashi, by the way, points out that he doesn't really know. We're saying they were Makadosh them. How exactly are you Makadosh the other cities of Eretz Yisrael? We said in our Mishnah how you Makadosh Yerushalayim and how you Makadosh the Azores. It doesn't say anywhere clearly how you what the procedure is to be Makadosh the other city. Okay, but whatever it is, apparently somehow they had some way of doing it. Some of the Mephoshim talk about that maybe it's a similar kind of thing. They were Makadosh it. They were maybe Makadosh it with a Toyota or something, whatever, but whatever it is, exactly, yeah. Anyway, so you see from that, but he says Kedusha Roshona is L'shaita, but not loss of love, that it expired. And yeah, that I'm not right, that therefore, when Mashiach comes, again, that he's going to be re-Makadosh Eretz Yisrael, and re-Makadosh the Orei Choyma, the Din of Boter Orei Choyma, then, the same way as in the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, the Din of Boter Orei Choyma applied to the ones that were walled when Yeshua and the Jewish people entered Eretz Yisrael, and the same way as during the second Beit HaMikdash, it applied to the ones that are listed in the Mishnah, the ones that were walled when the second Beit HaMikdash was built, so also, whichever ones in Eretz Yisrael are walled when Mashiach comes, are the ones that will have the Din of Boter Orei Choyma.
When Mashiach comes.
Practically speaking, I guess that's really only Yerushalayim. I don't think there are any other walled cities. Maybe it's fast, I don't know. Yeah, okay. Anyway, I don't know. I mean, you have also you have these various Yeshuvim in Yehuda and Sherman or whatever that have these fences around them because of the terrorists. Maybe those count as walls also. Maybe those could be considered walled cities in Mashiach. They'll be able to take down the walls because we won't have to worry about the Arabs anymore. But still, maybe they'll still have. I don't know. Okay. Anyway, On the other hand, Rimini, but I have a contradiction. So here we have a Braisa where Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi is saying that the original Kedusha expired. But then we have another Braisa, Amr Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, that the same Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi says, what do you mean? Why is the Mishnah listing only half a dozen cities? Are these the only ones that are walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun? You have a pasuk that says that in Bashan, in Eivre HaYarden alone, you had Shishim Ir Kol Chevel Agur.
On
the other side of the Yarden.
Bashan was...
Bashan is now nowadays most of Bashan is in the Golan Heights. Some of it is probably in Jordan, whatever. But but it's across the Yarden. It's the area.
Bet-Shan
is on the western side of the Yarden. Yeah.
But I thought it was called Bashan, Bet-Shan.
It's called Beishan. In some places, the Gemara calls it Beishan, which is short for Beishan.
That's in the Golan.
Beishan is not in the Golan. Beishan is in the Yarden Valley.
Right.
It's southwest of the Kinneret. Bashan, the Bashan is east of the Kinneret. Like I say, more or less the Golan Heights. More or less the Golan Heights and maybe some areas south of it that are in, maybe some areas east and south of it that are in nowadays in Syria or Jordan or whatever. Yeah. Anyway. So the Pasuk says just in Bashan alone, you had Shishim Ir, 60 cities, Kol Chevel Agur, the entire region of Agur, Rashi says means the palatial region, Mamlechas Oigbabon, the area of palaces and the Rashi translates over there that Agur means the palace. On the Pasuk, Mamlechas Oig Baboshan. This is all in the kingdom of Oig in Boshan. So they're alone. So this is in the north again, in the Golan. So therefore, you have in that area. So there alone, you have 60 walled cities. So why is the Mishnah only listing a half a dozen? And the Pasuk continues, Kol Ela Orim Betzures Choyma Gvaya. All of these are walled cities with high walls. Fortified cities with high walls. Ela lama manu chacham maselu. So he says, in that case, why did the chachamim list only the six or seven or whatever in that Mishnah? Shekshe olu bnei agola matu elu v'kidshum. Because when the bnei agola came up, they found these and they were makadosh them. Kidshum ashta. What do you mean they were makadosh them now? Hamina l'kamon delay tzricha l'kadoshi. We're gonna say at the end of this braisa, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi continues later on in this braisa that they didn't need to be makadosh them again. That the original kadosh lasted. That's why the Gemara is bringing this, because you have a contradiction between two statements of Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. So what do you mean you were makadosh them? No, what it means is they found these as they were traveling along. They came across these, and therefore they counted them. They made an official list that everybody should remember. These cities that we passed by on the way are known to be walled, and therefore they have the dinim of Bate Orechayim. But they're known to be walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun.
So therefore,
this Braitha contradicts the previous one, but they had to be Makadosh them again. And he continues, V'loy Ela Bovad. So as a matter of fact, it's not only the six or seven that are in the Mishnah over there. Ela Kol Shetala B'yotcha Masordas Navitzecha Shemukofes Chaimim Mot Yeshua Ben Nun. Any city in Eretz Yisrael where you have a tradition from your ancestors that it is walled from the time of Yeshua Ben Nun, Kol Mitzvot Elu Noyeg Esba, all the mitzvot of Bote Ode Choma apply to it. So the dinim about buying, the Kedusha is there, the dinim of buying a house in it, the dinim that so really you have to leave it, the gin that you, Yovel doesn't apply to it, but you buy a house in it, you have a year to buy it back, and if not, then it's forfeit.
Okay.
Yeah, but the dinim that you have to send out mitzrayim from there, the din that you lay in the Megillah in there on Shushan Purim rather than on Purim. So any city, because the original kedusha is permanent. So kasha did a b'shmal, but yes, you had a b'shmal, but yes, you have a contradiction. One b'raisa is saying the original kedusha expired, and therefore they will only remakadish these six or seven cities. And this is besides Yerushalayim, we're not talking about yet. But and the other one is saying that that any city that we know is mukaf chaimim imaytish rabbanun still has kedusha. So one possibility is Taka. We have two Tanoim that argue about what Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi said. They were both at Talmidim. One of them understood him to be saying that the original Kedusha expired, the other one not. Or the other possibility is you could say that one of these Braises, namely the second one, is not Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi, but Rabbi Lozer. Maybe it was his brother, I don't know, but whatever, a different Tana with the same father's name. And how do we know that? The Tanya, because we have another Braisa, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi said, Omer, that he says like this, that when the Pasuk mentions in Parshas Bahar this concept that you buy a city, a house in a walled city, you have a year to buy it back, and if not, then it's forfeit, and you don't even get it back in Yovel, the Pasuk uses the expression, Asher Loi Choyma, that you, the Pasuk says that it that you have a Kriyup Siv over there. You have, so you have a Kriyup Siv over there. The Kri is, you read it Ashaloi with a Vav, meaning that it has a wall. The Ksiv is Ashaloi Choyma with an Aleph, that it does not have a wall. So what does it mean? How do you reconcile those two? It means Afaf Yishayim Lai Aksha V'Hoyolo Kodim Lachain. It means, even if it right now, it doesn't have a wall, but originally, when Yeshua conquered Eretz Yisrael, it had a wall, then it's still considered a walled city. So therefore, so we see that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi says that the original Kedusha still exists, even if you weren't Makadosh it now again. So he's the one who holds that Kedusha Roshoyne exists permanently, as opposed to Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi. And the first Braisa is the one that says that it does not. So there, Rabbi Nachman now has a source he can be following, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi, the first Braisa over here, in saying that the Kedusha Roshoyne is not lost at love. By the way, Rashi points out on the Pasuk over there an interesting thing, a grammatical thing. He says usually the word ear in Hebrew is feminine. Ir Chadasha, for example, whatever. It's interesting, by the way. You know, we say in benching, or we say in Alamichi, whatever. Ir Hakodesh, which is Lashon Zachar. I once saw something from Yaakov Kamenetsky. He says Ir Hakodesh does not mean the holy city. Then it would have to be Ir Hakodesha. It means the city of holiness.
Kodesh
meaning the adjective of holiness. Anyway. So Rashi says, by right, the Pasuk should have said Ashaloch Choyma.
Right.
But the problem is then you wouldn't be able to have this Kriyuk Siv and have this Jerusha about that it has a wall now and it didn't before. Therefore, instead it used Lashon Zachar. So that's the Maskana. We have two different opinions, whether Kedusha Roshoyna is Kedusha, is Kidshul Shaita and Lost Lover or not.
Yeah.
Again, the Halacha is, it depends. If you're talking about Eretz Yisrael and the walled cities in it, versus if you're talking about Yerushalayim and the Beis Mikdash. The original Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael and the walled cities in it, there was a second Kedusha from the times of Ezra. That's what's binding nowadays. Therefore, only the borders of Oled Babel, the narrower borders of Eretz Yisrael, are mitzvahs aplois baretz, applicable, and are applicable there fully.
Which means it has a lower level of Kedusha.
No, so in other words, the areas outside of it have a lower level of Kedusha. For example, north of Akko, south of Ashkelon, whatever, there's borders that are described in a few different places there's borders that have the higher level of Kedusha, that have the full dinim of Shmita and Shumas and Maisus and ever, and then have the areas outside of that, which weren't reconquered by Ola Bavo, were resettled rather by Ola Bavo, that have a lower level of Kedusha, yeah.
And east-west, is there a border?
There's also a border, yeah. I mean, the border, for example, I mentioned Beit Shan, for example, is an enclave within Eretz Yisrael that was not taken over by Ola Bavo, that didn't resettle over there, and therefore doesn't have the full dinim of Eretz Yisrael.
But the west, so to speak,
so parts of the West Bank, for the most of what they call the West Bank, whatever, Yehuda and Shemron, most of it does, the pashtus, most of those are areas that Ola Bavo did resettle.
Okay.
And maybe there are parts of them that not, but yeah. Okay. All right. Going back now to the Mishnah. So the Mishnah has told us, Nitma Ba'azara V'Nel Menetumah. We have the case where a person became Tomei in the Azara, and we said if he forgets the tumah, then he can also maybe chayev for a korban if he doesn't get out of there in the fastest possible way, in the fastest possible route, and in the fastest possible way. So Tumah Ba'azorah Manolon. Where do we know that from? How do we know a person is Chayav, a Malkus if it was B'mezid, a Korban if it was B'shogig, if he became Tomei in the Azorah? You can't say, now if you have, he walked into the Azorah while he's Tomei, fine, you have a clear lav in the Torah, V'lo Yitamu is Machaneim. They should not make the Machaneshina Tomei, and the Azorah is Machaneshina. But if he's already in there and became Tomei, he's not being Matamei right now. So who says he's Chayav for anything? Amar Rabbi Elazar, so Rabbi Elazar says like this. You have one pasuk, you have two pasukim, a few pasukim apart in Parshas Chukas, when it talks about the Parah Adumah. One pasuk says that a person who goes into the Beis Mikdash when he's Tomei, the pasuk says that he gets courage because it's Mishkan.
He made the Mishkan of Hashem
Tomei. V'chotzev echad emekiyas Mikdash Hashem Tomei. A few pasukim later, it says the Mikdash of Hashem he made Tomei. So what's the difference? Why is it two different expressions, and why do you have two psukim? In ene inyan l'tumah shebachutz, given that you don't need one of them to teach us, for the case where he became tamei outside and then walked in, because we would know that already. Teneu inyan l'tumah shebefnim, then you should apply it to the case where he became tamei while he's inside. So the first one teaches us outside, and the second one teaches us even if he's inside and became Tomei. He has to get out of there as fast as possible.
That's the Mikdash.
Yeah. Okay, the question is, Kroy Miyatri, are you telling me that you have an extra Pasuk over here that you're able to darshan from this? I have a different purpose for which both Pasukim are needed. D'tanya, Rabbi Lazar, we learn in a Braisa that Rabbi Lazar, before, this is, when we started Omar Rabbi Lazar, that was Rabbi Lazar the Amor. Now we're talking Rabbi Lazar the Tana. Yeah. Rabbi Elazar the Amora is Rabbi Elazar ben Kedos. Rabbi Elazar the Tanner is Rabbi Elazar ben Shamul. Anyway, so Rabbi Elazar. Yeah, in general, it doesn't call them by their father's names because we usually know which one is which. But yeah, okay. The Tanner, Rabbi Elazar, Omer, im nema mishkan lama nema mikdash, im nema mikdash lama nema mishkan. Why does it need to say both? Once it says mishkan, it doesn't need to say mikdash, and vice versa. The reason is like this. Because if it only mentioned that he made the Mishkan Tomei and it didn't use the word Mikdash, or you see, Omer, I would think to say, okay, Al Mishkan Yehei Chayev, fine, of course he's Chayev Kodesh if he goes into the Mishkan when he's Tomei, because the Mishkan has something special over the Beis Mikdash. Shari Mashuach B'Shemen HaMishkan, because the Mishkan was anointed with Shemen HaMishkan. As we said yesterday, only the first time in the Midbar did everything have to be anointed with Shemen HaMishkan. I don't know if each individual Uriah, but whatever, all the components of the Mishkan, yeah, had to be anointed with Shemen HaMishkan.
Sockets and...
I guess each individual socket, whatever, I don't know, whatever. We talked about the Caleb, but I guess not the Mikdash, because we said yesterday that only in the original time did they anoint all the Caleb and whatnot with the Shemen HaMishkan. After that, we said Avodos and Machanach, so just using them for the Avodah and all the rest of them. So therefore, you would think the Mishkan has an advantage over the Beis Mikdash. Val Mikdash lo yehi chayav. Maybe you should be chayav kares or korban for entering the Beis Mikdash when you're tamei, because the Beis Mikdash maybe doesn't have the higher level of kedusha because it wasn't anointed with Shemen HaMishkan. On the other hand, maybe you could argue with that. The im nema mikdash v'lo nema mishkan. On the other hand, if it only mentioned mikdash and not mishkan, how you say al mikdash yehi chayav? Then you would argue like this: for the mikdash, of course you chayav. Shadik kedushasik kedushas olam, because the mikdash, the base of mikdash, has a permanent kedusha. As opposed to the Mishkan, right? About Mishkan, lo yehi chayav. Maybe you shouldn't be chayav for the Mishkan. It moved from place to place.
We know that you couldn't be tamei in the Mishkan.
But if the pasuk only said in connection with Parah Adumah that if a person goes in when he's tamei, he gets kares ki yesh mikdash Hashem timei, you would say, okay, that din only applies in the permanent Beis Mikdash. Maybe it doesn't apply in the Mishkan, which is moved from place to place.
It would be difficult because we see from other parshas that they had to go outside the machane when they
only were, what do you have? You have over here where it talks about that the person who's tomei mes is not allowed to enter the Beis Mikdash. Elsewhere you have fine. It says v'yishalchum in a machane called tzeruah v'chol zov v'chol tomei lenefesh, but it doesn't spell out who has to go out of which machane. Maybe and besides, maybe it could mean, you know, you have there's a lav. Tosfos talks about a little bit over here. There's fine. There's a lav that a tomei is not allowed to enter the Beis Mikdash. Let's say who says he's chayv koritz for it. Maybe he's only chayv koritz for the permanent Beis Mikdash, but not for the Mishkan. What is the by the way? What's the permanence of one over the other? Rashi says the difference is the permanence is that once the Beis Mikdash is built, you're never allowed to bring korbanos anywhere else. As opposed to after the Mishkan was built, eventually when they came into Eretz Yisrael, they had a 14-year period when the Mishkan was in Gilgal, where they were allowed to bring korbanos on bamos. You had the period afterwards when the Mishkan was in Noiv and in Givon, whereas after the first Beis Mikdash was built, you're never allowed to bring korbanos anywhere else. Tosfos points out that actually there is an opinion elsewhere in the Gemara that wants to say that maybe after the Bais Hamikdash is destroyed you are allowed to. The halacha is not like that, but anyway, you do have such an opinion. So Tosfos says, though, rather you could say Kedushas Olam, first of all, means the Bais Hamikdash lasted much longer than the Mishkan. The Mishkan was only 40 years. The Bais Hamikdash lasted 410 and 420 years, respectively. And second of all, also, in the sense that at the Mishkan, fine, it was moved from place to place. Once the first Bais Hamikdash was built, fine, let's even argue, according to the opinion, that during the 70 years of Golas Babel, you were allowed to bring Korbanos on Bamos. But definitely, when they came to build the second Bais Hamikdash, it had to be in that exact spot. They couldn't move it anywhere else. In that sense, it has Kedushas Olam, according to everybody.
Well, they could have had Kedushas Olam on the first Bais Hamikdash.
The point is, in other words, Kedushas Olam, in the sense, once the Bais Hamikdash was built on that spot, it can never be built anywhere else.
So
that you could bring Bamos.
Yeah,
that's what we're talking about. In other words, that's what we're saying. Kedushas Olam.
Right.
So far you have three different possibilities with Kedushas Olam.
Here, we're talking about the first Bais Hamikdash.
Yeah, we're talking about the Bais Hamikdash in general. We're talking about the Bais Hamikdash as opposed to the Mishkan. We're talking about the Bais Hamikdash collectively, the first and the second, and eventually the third. Yeah. Okay. So therefore, l'chach nema mishkan, l'chach nema mikdash. So that is why it had to mention mishkan and mikdash. So you needed both of those psukim to teach us that. You don't have either of them available to teach us the din that we said before about b'fnim and b'chutz. So how is Rabbi Lazar, the Amora, learning b'fnim and b'chutz? If we say that we need both of them. Okay. The answer is Rabbi Lazar hachi kokashale. Now, what it is Rabbi Lazar's question is as follows. Now let's consider Mishkan. Which Rabbi Lazar, by the way, Tosfos discussed a couple of different possibilities. Which Rabbi Lazar are we talking about? Do we mean Rabbi Lazar the Tana, or do we mean Rabbi Lazar the Amora?
More the Amora.
No, there's two different ways. There's two different ways of learning what the question is. Let's consider Mishkan ikri mikdash or mikdash ikri mishkan. We know from other psukim, as we're going to quote soon, that the two terms are interchangeable. The Mishkan can also be called mikdash. The mikdash, the base of mikdash, can also be called Mishkan. Therefore, nichtev aydi v'aydi mikdash aydi v'aydi mishkan. So fine, you need two psukim, but let's have one of them. Let's have both of them use the word mikdash, or both of them have use the word mishkan. Mishkan or mikdash, lamali. Why should we need to the both expressions, mishkan and mikdash? So this is what Tosfos is talking about, that maybe Rabbeinu Chaim Koyen, he brings over there, that he argues that over here, we're talking about the Kedusha of the place, maybe you do need the word Mishkan and Mikdash, and therefore the question is, therefore the Rabbi Lazar we're talking about over here is Rabbi Lazar and the Braisa, Rabbi Lazar, the Tana, given that it says Mishkan, why does it say Mikdash, and vice versa, and the reason is because we can't learn one from the other. Because each one has a different type of Kedusha, because the Kedusha of the place is different. In each case, one is temporary, one is permanent, but one was anointed with the Shemana Mishkan, and the other not. Then Tosfos brings another explanation from Reb Shloime Mizroyish, that the question basically is, yes, you need two psukim, but you need two psukim to tell us what Rabbi Lazar the Amora says, but why use different expressions, Mishkan and Mikdash, if the two terms are synonymous? And the reason is Mishkan and Mikdash Lomali. Why do we need to say both Mishkan and Mikdash, both expressions? Shema mina tauti. Therefore, we can learn both things from it. We can learn what Rabbi Lazar the Tana is saying, that you needed to be told that these dinim apply both to the Mishkan, which was anointed with Shemana Mishka, but is temporary and has heter bamos after it, and to the permanent Bais Hamikdash, which was not anointed with Shemana Mishka, but has no heter bamos after it and can only be rebuilt in the same place.
And that's
Shemana. That we need that, but also because it uses a different expression, Mikdash and Mishkan, therefore we can also learn Rabbi Lazar the Amora's din, that you have the same din applying whether you became Tomei outside the Bais Hamikdash and then went in, or whether you became Tomei in the Bais Hamikdash, so you have to get out as fast as possible. So let's see. Bishleim Mikdash Ikri Mishkan. I can understand, yes, we see that the Mishkan, the Mikdash, the permanent Bais Hamikdash, can be called the Mishkan, because Dichtiv Nasati Mishkani B'Sechem, because you have the Pasuk in the brachos in Parshas Bechukosai, where Hashem promises, I will place my Mishkan among you, and the Mishkan there means the Bais Hamikdash, meaning if the Jewish people follow what Hashem says, then the Bais Hamikdash will be built and exist permanently, which will happen in the fullest way, loss of love, where it'll be permanent. So we see there that the Bais Hamikdash can be called Mishkan.
Could it be that Mishkan refers somehow to the fact that the Shekhinah is there and it's permanent?
Of course. I mean, it's called Mishkan because the Shekhinah rests there, of course. But the point is,
Mikdash,
Mikdash is called, it's true, it has two different angles. It's Mishkan because the place of Hashem's Shechina, and it's Mikdash because the place of Kedusha. Of course.
Until it was destroyed. Wasn't it?
Yeah, of course.
Right.
But the... And
you need all
terms. Yeah, fine. You have... No, of course. But that's the point. How do we see that the two terms are synonymous? How do we see that the permanent Beis HaMikdash can also be called Mishkan? We see from Venasati Mishkani the certain thing. And... Ela Mishkan the Ikri Mikdash Minolan, where you see the Mishkan in the Midbar, it's called Mikdash. Are you going to say it's based on the pasuk that describes how the Kohathim, the family of Kohath, who are carrying the Mikdash, go and start traveling after two of the Degolim, two of the groups of Shvatim have traveled? After Gego Machna Yehuda has traveled, then the Kohathim go and start setting.
First there was Yehuda and then
I'm sorry, I had it right the first time. The way it worked was as follows. You had Yehuda and his group, Yisachar and Zvolun travel. After them, you had the Levim who are carrying the structure of the Mishkan, the Bnei Gershon and Bnei Merari, who are carrying the wooden, the wooden, silver, and whatever part of the Mishkan and the curtains. Then you had Dego Machne Ruvin traveling, and then you had the Kohathim traveling, the Bnei Kohath carrying the Arden and the Mizbechos and the Shulchan and so forth, and then you had the other two Degolim. By the time the second Degel and by the time the Kohathim show up, the Mishkan has already been put up, and they can immediately bring in the Kalim into their proper places. The point is, so you have the expression that the Kohathim are carrying the Mikdash. And obviously that's referring to the Mishkan, but no, Ahu Ba'aron. See, that's talking about the Aron and the other Kalim. That's not talking about which have Kedusha. That's not talking about the Mishkan. The Mishkan was carried by the other people, by Bnei Gershon and Bnei Merari. Now, Elamai Hakav also be Mikdash for Shachanti B'Sechem. No, because you have the pasuk that says in Parashat Truma that Hashem says they shall make for me a Mikdash and I will dwell among them. Ochtiv, and the next pasuk says Kechol Ani Mara Ischa'is Tavdas HaMishkan, in accordance with everything that I show you, the form of the Mishkan. So we see that the Mishkan is called Mikdash. So there we see that the Mishkan can be called Mikdash and the Mikdash can be called Mishkan. Yeah. And yes, because each one has both angles. It's the Mishkan, it's the place of Hashem's Shechina, and it's the Mikdash, it's the source of Kedusha for the world. Yeah. Okay. So
the bottom line is, therefore, that we have both Mishkan.
We have that the dinim of Tumas Mikdash apply equally well to Mishkan and to this Mikdash, and that it also applies whether a person became Tameh outside and then went in, or whether a person became Tameh in the other. Next, the Mishnah had said that if a person, when he's leaving the Shtachava, if he bowed after he became Tameh, or he delayed the amount of time that that it would have taken to bow, then also he's chayav kores b'mezid or a korban b'shogeg.
If he delayed, yeah.
In other words, even he went out by the fastest possible route, but he took his time. He took extra time. So, Amar Rava, Loishanu Elashi Shtach Leklapi Pnim. This that we're saying, that he'd be chayev, the korban, would be if he bowed inward, meaning Rashi says towards the west. The Beis HaMikdash was set up on an east-west axis, we know. You have the entrance is on the east, the Kodesh HaKadoshim is on the west. So therefore, if he turns around and bows towards the west as he's leaving, that's when we're saying that he'd be chayev his korban because he did it for Shogun. As opposed to, but if he bowed towards the outside, towards the east, that is not called the Shtachavoya. Because he's inside the Azara. And he bowed. If he turns and bows towards the west, towards the Heichal and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that's when he'd be chayev, because he delayed longer than he's supposed to. He's supposed to be getting out of there. But if he bowed towards the east, that's not considered Hishtachava. That's not considered bowing. So therefore, only if he delayed long enough for his shtachavah, then he'd be chayev. But if not, if he did it real quick, then no. Then he wouldn't be chayev. Okay, there's different other explanations. Because he didn't delay long enough. We're going to say in a minute, we're going to say in the Gemara, that there needs to be a certain amount of delay for him to be chayev. Like this, there wasn't.
For the west side.
If he bows towards the west, then that's his shtachavah. In other words, what we're saying is we're going to have two different versions of the Gemara, but the first version that we have over here is it's one or the other. Either if you bow or if you delay long enough. Bowing, by definition, is only bowing towards the Heifer. which is westward.
Right.
So therefore, only if he bows towards the Heichel do we say automatically, no matter how fast he did it, that will make him chai of the Korban. If he did it to the east, we'll have to time how long it was. If it was the amount of time that it would take for a regular Ishtachavoya, which we're going to say soon in the Gemara how long that is, then fine, he's going to be chayiv on those grounds. But if he did it real quick, then he wouldn't be chayiv because that's not considered Ishtachavoya. Okay, yeah, the Rimi Gash talks about it a little bit differently. He says klape pnim and klape chutz just means in the direction that he's going out of the Azara versus in the if he turns around the opposite direction. Similar idea.
That's a question of time. I don't see what's the difference between east and west.
Because again, because that's what we're saying. Just the fact that he bows is enough. If he does an actual bowing, meaning towards the west, that itself is enough to be mechayiving, because that's considered a delay.
Regardless of the amount of time.
So Avali Shtachla Klapit Chutz, if he bowed outward, meaning towards the east, Sha'ein Loi Sha'aloi, only if he took long enough for a normal bowing would he be chayev on the grounds of the delay, but not, if not, then not. He's not chayev on the grounds of the bowing alone.
Was he obligated to bow before he left?
No, he's not. No, but normally a person bows before they leave the Azara.
Right.
So this guy probably, he didn't realize, he forgot momentarily that he was Tomei or whatever, or he didn't know the Din or whatever, and therefore he figured, you know what, before I'm leaving I should bow in respect to Hashem. But he's not supposed to be doing
that. Outside the Azara.
I suppose if he goes outside the Azara, yeah, then he can bow, sure. Yeah. Okay. Others learn that the statement of Rava is referring to the Sefer of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah, the first version is that Rava's statement is referring to the word Hishtachva in our Mishnah. That if he bowed, and we're saying only if he bowed westward, if he bowed eastward, then it's not just a question of whether he bowed, then we have to see how long he took. The second version is it goes on the Sefer, where it says, if he delayed the amount of time that it takes to bow. Implying, which seems to imply that bowing itself takes a certain amount of time. How long? And in other words, if he didn't delay that amount, then he wouldn't be chayav a korban. According to the second version, only if he bowed outward, only if he bowed toward the east, are we saying that only if he did it in the amount of time that it normally takes to bow? Aba klapi pnim, but if he bowed toward the east, toward the west rather, if he bowed inward toward the Heichel, afa gavdalei shoha, then he would be chayiv even if he didn't take any time at all, even if he did it quickly. Therefore, the Mishnah is saying like this: shtachla klapi pnim, if he bowed toward inward toward the west. Or he delayed the amount of time that it would take to bow but he was bowing toward the east. In either way, chayav. So on the face of it, the two versions over here seem to be saying the same thing. There doesn't seem to be so much a nachamina between them in halach. And in fact, the Torah Chaim asks on that, and why do we have two different versions without even mentioning an Ikka Benayu or something, as the Gemara would usually do? Okay, some of the Mephoshim point out there may be a slight difference between them as far as timing, or like this, are we talking about that he's bowing as he's moving, basically, or are we talking about, Okay, what is the definition? How do you have ishtachava where there is a delay, and how do you have ishtachava that there's not a delay? On the face of it, it takes a certain amount of time. What's the difference? The answer is, the kind where there's no delay, zukriya ba'almin, means where he just gets down on his knee. That is considered that there's no shahiyah, because that doesn't take the full amount of time that a full bowing does. So if he just gets on his
knee,
that's what it says. 1 second. What is the kind that's considered that it has a delay? Pishuk yadayim b'raglayim, is if he spreads out his arms and legs on the floor. So like when we do Kodim on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, I don't know if it's a full Hishtachava. I'm not sure if Pishit Yadayim Raglayim. I don't know if Pishit Yadayim Raglayim actually means spreading them out, like going spread eagle on the floor, or does it mean just that he gets down on his hands and knees on the floor? No, because Kriya, we're saying, is just on his knees. So maybe Hishtachava is enough, like he gets down with his hands and his face on the floor as well, like we do Kodim. Or maybe not. Maybe it actually means being spread eagle on the floor. I don't know. Okay. So that's the difference. If a person were to just kneel,
he wouldn't be.
Then, well, it depends. If he does it towards the west, then he would be chayev, because then it doesn't matter whether it's shihir or not. Just the fact that he did it ishtachavah while he's tomei makes him chayev. But because ishtachavah towards the east is not considered ishtachavah, then therefore only if he did a full ishtachavah, only if he did down on his hands and feet. And again, according to the other explanations, according to the Rimigash and according to others, it's really more a question of is he doing it on his way out, or versus is he doing it in a different direction, basically. Okay. Fine. The kama shiur shihir. Now, what is considered the amount of time that would make him chayev for the delay? So Rabbi Yitzchak ben Achmeni and another chacham who was along with him argued, Umanu, and the Gemara interjects, and who was that other one with him? Rav Shimon ben Pazi. The Amilo, or the other version is Rav Shimon ben Pazi, v'chad ime, Umanu, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Achmeni. So it's the same people, but the difference is which one, like the argument would be which one was the more important and which one was like secondary to him. The Amilah Rav Shimon ben Achmeni, or others say that the second one is not Rav Yitzchak ben Achmeni, but Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni. So yeah, okay. So you have three different versions. You have two different versions who the people were. Anyway, what is the machloket? Chad Amar commemorate the high psukah. One of them says the amount is the time it takes to say the following pasuk, which we're going to quote on the next line, or on the end of this line. The time it takes to say that entire pasuk is the time that's considered the shiur ishtachavah. The other one says only the second half of the pasuk, beginning from the word vayichu. What is the pasuk? There's a pasuk from Divrei Yomim that describes how at the Chanukah Habayit, at the first business, after Shlomo had said his whole long tefillah, that Hashem should accept it as the Jewish people's tefillah for the year, etc., etc. So the pasuk says, V'chol b'nei Yisrael royim, the entire Jewish people saw, v'redet ha'esh, when the fire came down on the Mizbeach, u'chvoyed Hashem al ha'boyis, and the glory of Hashem was on the Beit HaMikdash, the cloud was on the Beit HaMikdash, v'yichru apayim arsa, they bowed with their faces to the ground, al rispa on the floor, v'yishtamu, and they bowed, and they prostrated themselves, v'chvoyed Hashem kitoyim, and they praised, and they thanked Hashem that he's good, ki lo'olam chaser, that his chesed is forever. So the first opinion is that you need, it's the amount of time it says it takes to say that entire pasuk at a normal pace, that Amram says. The other is that it's the time it takes to say the second half of the pasuk, from Vayichru, that describes how they bowed. Okay, the time it takes to say the word, according to the second opinion, which is how the Rambam passed in the halacha, the time it takes to say Vayichru, Achayim Arta, Al-Rizpa, Vayishtachlu, Vahurdes, Lashem, Tito, Sil, Olam, Chastai, that is Shir Yishtachavah.
It's not enough that you want to say that you spread yourself out of the floor.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe that's why it's like curtain. You see curtain to get down on your hands and feet. Curtain doesn't take very long. So maybe that's what I'm saying. Maybe Pishut Yadayim Ve'Rav Lahim. Maybe that's considered Pishut Yadayim Ve'Rav Lahim. I don't know. Okay. That's what I'm saying. I don't know whether it is. I don't know whether Pishut Yadayim Ve'Rav Lahim means actually being spread eagle or whether it means just, yeah. Okay. Anyway. The Kesef Mishnah wants to say that the Rambam would understand the first opinion, Kamenrei, doesn't mean the entire pasuk, it means the first half of the pasuk. So you have two different opinions. Is it the first half of the pasuk from B'chol B'nei Yisrael until Alaboyus, or is it the second half from Vayichru until Tilo Yom Kaseh? And the Rambam would understand that it's either one or the other, apparently. And that's why the Rambam, either the first part or the second part. Because otherwise you have a question, why is the Rambam passing according to the swifter opinion and saying that it's only the second half?
Why?
Well, that's
the second half.
The second half is compared to the whole pasuk. It's shorter in the shorter amount of time. But if you say the second half is compared to the first half, in fact, is shorter.
But it doesn't matter
anything.
The first half takes the
shorter. You can see the first half is from the whole until Alaboyus, which is less than a wide line, and the second half is from Vayichru to Tilalim Kaseh, which is just over a wide line. So it's a drop longer. Okay, whatever, makes a difference. Yeah. Turn it up on them. We learn it a bright. So what is the difference between different types of bowing? Kida alapayim. When we say, whenever we mention the word kida, that somebody did kida, vayikoid, vayim al, vayikoid, etc., it means alapayim. It means just on the face. So in other words, only the face touches the ground. So the Gemara discusses in a few places the idea that kida involves that you support yourself with your thumbs and then bend over so your face touches the ground. I'm not sure
we're doing them differently.
It's not quite the same because you get down on hands and knees.
Right.
Here we're talking about only the face, only the soles of the feet and the face touch the ground. So either it means like a person So the Gemara, in fact, discusses. It's a very difficult thing to do. The Gemara discusses that, for example, Levi once did that in front of Rebbe, and afterwards he was lame. He injured his hips doing that.
Right.
So it's either I don't know whether it means like the person gets himself almost perpendicular to the ground and then supports himself like this and then lifts himself back up, or whether it means that the person stands like this and bends double. Whatever it is, that's what Kida is. And we see that because the pasuk describes Chenu Omer, and we see a pasuk describes Batikud Bathsheba Apayim Oret. The pasuk says that Bathsheba did kida with her face on the ground. So the implication is only the face, nothing else. Kriya al.
Men can do it all. Kriya, you have different places in the circuit where it's described by Yikori that is said by Yikori.
Kriya al b'chayim. Whenever it says in the pasuk that somebody kneeled, it means on their knees. V'cheinu omer mekroya al b'chayim. We have the example that describes Shlomo HaMelech after Chanukah Tabayis that he was kneeling on his knees. So yeah, hishtachavah is u'krisha d'raim v'raglayim, and hishtachavah means getting down on hands and feet. Again, I don't know if it means like totem or if it means spread out completely flat on the floor. Okay, v'cheinu omer, and thus you have a pasuk. We see by Yosef's dreams where Yaakov tells him, "Are you expecting that I and your mother and your brothers are going to come prostrate ourselves on the ground?" So on the ground, implying you're completely on the ground. Okay. So those are the three definitions.
So one is
just with your head. One is just like bent double or almost perpendicular to the ground, but only with the head touching the ground. One is on your knees and one is completely on the ground. Okay. Boy, Rava. Rava asked the question like this. Sort of Shehiel Malkus, sort of Shehiel Malkus. When we're talking about this idea that you need a certain amount of time after you became Tomei, that you're a certain amount of time in the Azara, only then do you eat more than you need to. Only then do you become Chayav HaKorban. What about them? The same thing apply as far as Malkus. If they told him that you're Tomei, get out of here as fast as possible.
We learned that.
We did. If a person comes into the Azara of the Mazi, and they give him a straw, he'll get Malkus.
Right.
So now we're asking like this: he's in the business. She's in the Azara. He becomes Tomei. They immediately give somebody, people standing there immediately give him a straw. Get out of here as fast as possible. If you stay here any longer than after, you will get Malkus. He remains there less than the amount of time that he just said, less than the amount of time it says it takes to say, by Yisroel, I am our Tzara Tzara. Well, that's the question. Oh, you ain't Tzara Shehir, the Malkus, or maybe as far as Malkus, you don't need that amount of time. Do we say with Korban, Gemiri Shehir, do we say that we only have a law for Moshe Sinai that you need this minimum amount of time to be Chayav HaKorban? Maybe the Malkus, like Gemiri Shehir.
Yeah, maybe for Malkus, you don't need that. As long as he delays even any amount, then he's Chayav Malkus.
Seems to go both together.
Or maybe the halacha of Moshe Sinai is that it applies when you're inside the Azara, you have to get out right away. Loshna la korban or loshna la malchus. So it doesn't matter as far as a korban or as far as malchus.
Right.
And the answer is teiku.
We don't know.
We don't know, so therefore the person will get makas maudus in a case like that. Another example. Boy, Rava. No, it is his fault. He has to get out as fast as possible. If he delays, if he gets out as fast as possible, for sure, he's an oinus. He did what he could. But we're saying if he delays, in other words, let's say, for example, to say this half pasuk by Yichru until Kilo Elam Chaste, let's say it takes five seconds. So he delayed 4 seconds. As he's going, he stopped for 4 seconds and then continued walking.
Right.
Is he Chayav Malkus or not? So it's Teiku. We don't know. Another one, Boy Rava, Tola asked me ba'aver azorama. Rava asked another question. What happens if he suspended himself in the airspace of the Azara for the amount of time of Shehiyah? So, he had somebody attach a pulley to him, and he hung there in the air of the Azara for the 5 seconds or whatever. Does that make him? Would he be Chayav the Korban in that case, or Malkus if it was the
Mazir?
If he is Tomei, he became Tomei, then he had somebody pull him up by a rope or whatever, and now he's suspended over there. What's the din? Ki Gmiri Shehiya, do we say when we have the Halacha Mesh Mishinai that if you're there Kadei Shehiya, then you're Chayav the Korban? Only Shehiya Debasi Shtachavah. Maybe that only applies to the type of Shehiya where he could conceivably then do his Shtachavah. Maybe it doesn't apply in a case like that where he's not able to do his shtachavah at that point while he's suspended in the air. Or maybe the halacha of Mishnah applies as long as you're b'fnim. Doesn't matter whether he's able to do his shtachavah or not. And again, the answer is teiku. Yeah. by the way, this is relevant. So the one thing this is relevant to the interesting question nowadays, are you allowed to fly over the Har HaBayis in a plane? We're all Tmei Emes nowadays. Do we say that you're not allowed to be in the Avir Azorah when you're in the Tamei or not? Tosfos, in fact, brings a Girsa. Tosfos brings a Girsa.
Someone who was in the Har
HaBayis. This is it.
And was suspended.
Fine, but okay. So Tosfos actually discusses over here. Tosfos mentions a Girsa that the main question the Gemara has is the airspace of the Azorah considered to have the same din as the Azorah or not? So okay, Tosfos has some questions on that Girsa, but there is that question. Is the airspace above the Azorah considered part of the Azorah? If you say that not, then sure, you can fly in a plane over it. If you say that yes, then you can't.
I would say
okay.
Can.
Another question, Boy Ravashi, Timei Atzmei Mamezid Mahu. What happened to the person who was Matani himself the Mezid while he was in the Azorah?
What's the question?
Well, Oynes Gemiri Shehiyah, then do we say that he has to have Shehiyah in there in order to be Chayav the Korban? Ba'onis gemiri shehiyah b'meizav like gemiri shehiyah. Does it only apply where he became tamei there ba'onis? Then he has to have that minimum amount of time for him to be to the 5 seconds or whatever that he delays in order to be chayev. But b'meizav like gemiri shehiyah. Maybe the halacha mishmasina doesn't apply if he was metame himself b'meizid.
Right.
Or dumma b'fnim gemiri shehiyah. Or maybe the again maybe the halacha mishmasina is it applies as long as he's b'fnim. Loishna ba'onis for loishna b'meizid. It doesn't matter whether he was metame himself for shogeg or b'meizid. And again, teiku. And one. What?
Mashal
for this. Mashal beside that. Meanwhile, what it would be, he'd be chayav makas malchus. And one more, boy Ravashi, nozer b'kever boy shehiyah l'malchus ain't a tzarech. What about? How about a case not involving the Bais HaMikdash? Do we a nazir who becomes tomei? A nazir who becomes tomei by a kever. Does he need shehiyah in order for him to be chayav malchus? Because here we're not talking in the Bais HaMikdash. Here we're talking about it's a separate din. A nazir is not allowed to become tomei,
right.
But like this, he accidentally became tomei, and they're giving him a surah, get out of there as fast as possible, and he stays less than
the
kedeshim
of the
kaver. Yeah. So does he need shehiyah to be chayav malchus or not? The snim gemir shehiyah b'chus gemir shehiyah. Do we say the halacha mishmasina only applies to snim in the azara? Maybe it doesn't apply to a case of a nazir, which is outside the azara. Or juma b'onus gemir shehiyah, or maybe the halacha mishmasina is shehiyah applied to a case of onus. Loishna mafnim loishna b'chus. Doesn't matter whether it was inside the azara or not. And again, teiku.
So he would have Marcus Maudis.
He's not Marcus Maudis in the job. Marcus Maudis is basically just at the discretion of Beis Din. They have as much as they need to so that he learns his lesson and doesn't do such a thing again.